Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to another installment of a beautiful podcast. I am so happy to talk to you today. How are you? I hope you're all doing well, staying safe, staying home, staying healthy. I have been doing my level-headed best to save the world by doing nothing. I've just been staying home and minding my own business, which is kind of nice for a change. I've talked to you about this before. I've enjoyed that part of the experience. And of course, with all this ample free time that I'm not wasting in airport lounges and on planes flying hither and thou, I've got plenty of time to do other stuff. And so that's been kind of nice. I feel a sort of very welcome surge in productivity of late. And things are, shaping up. It's been really nice to see the community rally around the COVID crisis, rally together in support of responding to the COVID crisis. And so there's all these sorts of very interesting virtual conferences. I'm speaking at one just next week. We just did Spring Live at VMware. The Spring team put together an online conference, 24 hours of online content, just a few weeks ago. And that went, and then we donated donations. We donated money. I'm not sure if it was donations or if it was just our money, but either way, I think it was just our money because it was a free conference. We donated just our money to help combat the COVID crisis. So after the 24 hour, and I think it was based on how many people came to the show. So after the 24 plus hours, it was like 27, 28 hours. After the very last talk was done, very shortly thereafter, within 24 hours, we wrote a check for $20,000 to a charity to support a response to the COVID crisis, right? And I know lots of people are doing the same thing. There's another conference at which I'll be speaking just next week. It's on the 15th of April, 2020. It's called All the Talks, and I'll be there speaking as well a number of other amazing speakers, including but not limited to Ray Tsang from Google, with whom I've had the privilege of presenting before, Dr. Venkat Subramaniam, with whom I've also had the privilege of presenting before, and by the way, both of whom have been guests on this very podcast, so you know them, and I hope you'll go see them. There's also some others that I haven't yet had the privilege of having on this particular show, including the legendary John Allspaugh, right? John Allspaugh is if you know about DevOps, then you probably know his name. He's one of the thought leaders in the non-ironic sense of the word that sort of launched that movement. He's definitely going to be there, worth going for that, if nothing else. And, it's going to be a lot of good stuff. I hope you'll be there. It's been a really exciting week. I cannot, the 15th is going to be a long way from now. It's the 9th as I record this. This episode will be up for the 10th. That implies that there's about 5 days between now and then, between which you can do other things. And I'm hoping that you have been paying attention to the Spring.io Fortress blog, because there, like always, I have new stuff. I have This Week in Spring, the blog that rounds up all the latest and greatest that's fit to reprint in the Spring ecosystem and the ambient ecosystems. And I have my Spring Tips video. This week we looked at using the Spring integration Kotlin DSL. And then finally, just today, having absolutely nothing to do with me and everything to do with the awesomeness of Spring Boot, we announced 0.6, 0.6, or 0.6, or not 0.6, of the Spring Boot GraalVM native image builder support. So we've been working on this for more than a year. We announced it, I think, at last year's Spring One event in September, October. So lots of great stuff. It's really exciting to see this now. It's actually even more approachable. There's the documentation to get it working in any old stock standard Spring Boot application is there. It's in the blog, and there's documentation you can follow along with to use it in various modes. I hope you'll give it a shot. What this means is that you can now take your Spring Boot application and turn it into a native image, okay? The result of which is that your code will run smaller memory footprint, and of course in much less startup time, right? You can get a full-featured Spring Boot application to go from a second to down to, two-tenths of a second, right? It's or less or more, depending on what you've got going on there. But it can be considerable. It can be substantial to the point where you can now take that. And by the way, it's a statically linked image. You can take that application and just deploy it into a container, which you can also do because now Spring Boot also can generate containers, right? You can generate a Docker image by using Spring Boot 2.3.0's support for building containers. Now, this is a really, really nice change, right? These two things together, I think, are going to be very, very nice because people are already using Spring. It's already by far the most prolific way to build applications destined for the cloud. But this just makes it even easier. I'm super excited to see all this happen. So I hope you'll give it all that a shot. Now, my friends, today, I'm very excited that we're going to have Kashagra Thapar. He's a senior developer on the Cosmos SDK team for Microsoft. He also works on Spring Data Cosmos DB. So he works on the Cosmos DB SDK as well as the Spring Data umbrella project for Cosmos DB. And it was just a really, really, really interesting, wonderful experience to talk to him for this interview. I learned a ton, always. We have a great relationship with Microsoft. They've been just prolific in making Spring a first-class citizen on Azure. And if you've ever used Spring Cloud Azure, which is our open-source project that provides idiomatic Spring extensions and integrations for various infrastructure pieces on Microsoft Azure, you'll know that to be true. You'll know that there's just a really rich offering there. Going further, of course, we even announced another project, another endeavor, another joint enterprise called called Azure Spring Cloud. Now, Azure Spring Cloud is not just me, mixing up the order of the words. It's actually a separate thing. It's actually a platform that you can pay for. You can have Microsoft host and run for you, built atop Kubernetes. That is a turnkey way of getting Spring Boot applications up and running in the cloud. It gives you access to all the normal and desired Spring Cloud infrastructure, things like Spring Cloud Config Server and the Spring Cloud Netflix Eureka distribution. All that stuff is just pre-provided for you, along with all the other good stuff that Microsoft Azure provides. And you can give Azure Spring Cloud a jar, your Spring Boot jar, and voila, it'll just be up and running. It'll be given a URL. You can scale it out. You can bind it to backing infrastructure like your config server, your service registry, or your Microsoft SQL Server database, or whatever, right? Any of a number of different things, Active Directory, etc. So really compelling offering there. I've just been such a big fan because it shows that they really, really, really want Spring developers to have a first-class experience on Azure, better than just a regular Java experience, right? Obviously, they care about the Java experience, but they can do more because of Spring Boot, right? And they want that to be as compelling an offering as anything out there. So I've just really enjoyed talking to yet another talented engineer on that team. We've had a lot of different previous episodes with folks from Microsoft, and we'll continue to do that, of course. We've had folks from Google and so on as well, and Alibaba. So, I love our ecosystem partners, and I love especially when I get to talk to their engineers and see how they're doing these amazing things. Cosmos DB, as you're gonna find out, is a really compelling database. It's really compelling. It's rich, and so you'd be foolish to ignore it, to sleep on that particular offering. All right, my friends, I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope you learn a lot. I hope you have fun. Stay safe out there. Stay healthy, and as always, I'll see you next time.
Hopes, but you never know. Yeah. Okay. We're being recorded. You're being recorded. I am so grateful you're here. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure.
First of all, for the audience, could you tell us who you are?
Yeah, sure. So, hey, everyone. I am Kashagra Thapar. I work for Microsoft. I'm a senior software developer on the Cosmos DB SDK team, and I lead the Spring Data Cosmos DB project as well. I've been in Microsoft for almost a year now. I joined in January 2019, and before then I was working in Chicago in a trading firm. And back then I did my master's from UIC in computer science, and yeah.
Cool. And so, so where are you based?
So I'm based in Seattle right now. I'm originally from India, and I came to US, I guess, almost 4 years back.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you're here. Even though when I say here, I mean the States, even though right now I'm not in the States. But but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That's great. That's super cool. I hope to meet you the next time I'm in the Seattle area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think the next Spring One conference is going to be in Seattle itself. So I think, yeah, we'll definitely meet again in the Spring One.
Ample opportunities. Very good. So you're on the Spring Data Cosmos DB team. Can you tell us what Cosmos DB is?
Yeah. So Cosmos DB is a multi-model, globally distributed database. And when I say globally distributed, you can use just turnkey to enable any global regions that right now Cosmos DB and Azure supports, which is across, I guess it's across like 96 countries, and it has like almost 160 different regions to support. And you can change, the global distribution to any one of those. It's a multi-model database. It supports, SQL APIs. It supports table APIs, graph APIs, key value pairs, and whatnot.
Okay, so did you say 96 countries? 96?
Yeah. 96.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. That
is amazing.
That is, I'm still stuck on that. I heard the rest of what you said, but I just, 96, yeah. Even if you're off by 50, that's still crazy.
50, like, that's still crazy. Yeah.
It's still crazy. I know. Yeah. What is that? Yeah. 96 different. So you're saying you can put data on there and have
you
it
can put,
near,
yeah.
near you. Wherever,
exactly.
If you've got people in 96 different countries, that data can be near them.
Yeah.
Without doing something, just writing.
Yeah. And on top of that, it also supports, you can choose, different regions for like writing and reading. So I think that gives you this, granular capabilities of, okay, if, there are more writes from the Asia region, then you can enable the writes from there. And if there are more reads, from somewhere else in the world, then you can just, enable that. So it supports multi-master read and write capabilities.
Wow. That's crazy. Cosmos DB is not the cheapest database out there, but it is certainly one of the most amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I didn't mean to.
No.
It was not my intention, friend, to cut you off after, right in the middle of the part where you explained that in addition to being everywhere you want data to be, basically.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've got a Martian outpost or something as well. But in addition to doing all that, it also is multi-model. So you were saying it does graph databases, document databases.
Exactly. Yeah. It does all of those. I think the basic model is somewhere around like, you have a database account, then you can have like collections, which are like similar to containers. And then within containers, you have these documents. And now if you want to use, or if you want to support the model of a graph, then you have those like nodes and edges. And if you want to do a key value pair, then it's like a giant table, and you can just, put your key value pairs in. The documents are inherently supported with the basic model it has. And I think there's a table support as well. So these four are the main ones.
So do you offer compatibility layers? Because you just described four different database products. I would have otherwise gone to four different vendors before.
Exactly.
For each one of those facilities.
Yeah. And then that's the best part about Cosmos DB, that you can, support any one of these. And then on top of that, we have like connectors for MongoDB, CassandraDB. So basically, if you have your data in MongoDB or CassandraDB, you can just, we have the APIs, we have the SDK for those, and you can just change the properties behind the scenes, and then you won't have to worry about the code change at all. So basically, with just a change of like, the keys and the URL and the host, I think that's all what you've got to do, and everything would automatically work.
That's so cool.
That's
so cool.
Yeah.
Wow. So you can actually, so people can start with those if they want. And by the way, you can run those things on Azure Cloud, right? It's not like you need to run on Cosmos DB. It's just that if you want to, you get this incredible turnkey experience. It's fully managed for you. And oh, by the way, you can get it up and running without so much as, configuration, basically, in 96 different countries.
Yeah, and I think you have these different metrics, different application insights that you can see in the Cosmos DB in the portal, on the Azure portal, that you can see like, okay, how many requests were like, you know, with a status code 200, or how many of them were like, you know, 500, like internal errors or something along those lines. So I think those metrics provide you a great insight about, okay, what's going on with my database, you know, how am I configuring the request and responses, how am I getting the data, is it fast enough, do I need to like scale it up, scale it down. Then I think one cool thing about Cosmos DB is, and I don't think any other database provides it right now, is the 5 different consistency models. So basically, instead of having like extreme versions of consistency, like, you know, strong or eventual, Cosmos DB provides these 5 different consistency models, which are like ranging from the strongest is the strong, and then obviously the weakest is the eventual, and in between you can get like, you know, bounded staleness, session, and then there is a consistent prefix. So these are different 5 consistency models that I just mentioned, and I think those are really cool because you can now change the consistency as you want. So basically, if you want that it is completely okay for my app to have a 2 to 3 second lag time, then I can choose a bounded staleness, and I can say that, you know, it is fine that even after 2 seconds, if I want, I can get the right data. But within those 2 seconds, it is completely okay to get the stale, or maybe, you know, not the latest, right? Mm-hmm. Not the latest update. Then there is session, then there is consistent prefix, and then it's, you know, eventual at the end.
Can you go into detail on what is a session and prefix?
Yeah. I think session is mostly that once you are connected to the database, once your client has a session to the database, then you would keep getting the latest updates, latest writes, mm-hmm. whatever are happening on the different regions. And I think consistent prefix is more towards, it's weak from the session, and it's more towards the eventual one. Mm-hmm. And it's not a highly used one as of now, because I think people want to stay between the strong and the session. Mm-hmm. And consistent prefix also has the same capabilities as the bounded staleness one has. It is more towards it is okay to have this much lag, or you can specify that it is okay to lag behind, like, you know, last 2 updates, last 2 writes.
Right.
So basically, yeah, it's more towards those kind of things.
The session mean that one client connected to the database would see consistent worldview, but others might not?
Yeah, others might not see that exactly at the same time, but they'll eventually catch up.
But within the same, for the one client,
within the same
the entire
client,
lifetime of my connection, I will see everything as I expected.
As actually, yeah.
I won't get stale reads.
Yeah. Oh, no, you won't.
That's super convenient. Okay. And that's, and when you say 2 to 3 seconds, we're not talking about, like, you know, me sitting in Seattle making a write to my local region in Seattle. We're talking about, like, I want to sit in Seattle, make a write, and then see that data from Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It'll be 2 to 3 seconds,
obviously.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, the SLAs for Cosmos DB are really good. We provide SLAs with 99.99 percentile, and those are, Cosmos DB gives you a read latency of less than 5 milliseconds and a write latency of less than 10 milliseconds for a 1 KB document. And those are, I think, pretty great. And I've been on the team for last 1 year, and I haven't seen any breach of those SLAs. I mean, it's most of the time I would see there's like CPU usage is high on the client side, or there's mm-hmm. some problem in the SDK itself. But Cosmos DB, I haven't seen it at all. I mean, that's incredible.
It does what it says it does on the tin.
Oh,
that's amazing. With the number of users you get, that's even more incredible. You know, it's a worldwide operation after all. That's one of the things about Azure that I don't think people appreciate. You have the most regions, mm-hmm. More than AWS, than Google, more than Alibaba, right? So
I think I was just gonna say, I think that is one of the most powerful things about Azure, that now it's, you know, spreading across the whole planet. And it's like, you know, you have all these regions where you can just enable whatever you want based on the requests you are getting from. So I think that's really good. Yeah.
Truly the enterprise is sort of cloud, you know. You even have a region in Azure, but it's not exactly the same, is it? It's a little different than the other ones. You have it in China, right? Like,
yeah.
That one is, it's, as I understand it, it's not like a, it's like a white label version of Azure that is licensed to a different company that happens to reside in China, something like that. It's not exactly Azure, but it's most of Azure. And so I'm not sure if Cosmos is there, probably is, but very interesting, and that's really hard to do. Anybody who knows anything about being in a cloud computing space, it knows that it's very difficult to operate a public utility in China because, of course, you know, you've got to make sure that you are that you comply with local regulations, right? Yeah. That's fair to say, right?
Oh yeah, I think that's very important. Yeah,
yeah. So the fact that Azure can take you to China too that's a huge win, right? And of course,
there's
a lot of people in China. Very nice market to be in.
I think the whole Asia market is gonna be the next growth,
huge.
Right?
Absolutely.
Totally agree.
India, I think there was in 2012, I think there was a state report. The United States State Department had a report that talked about, what would be the largest economy, you know, where the growth of the economies. And that report basically made the case that by 2030 or 50, one of those two, India would be the largest economy, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, both places hopefully. Are very interesting places to be.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yes.
Well, that's super cool. Okay, so you've got this incredible database. You've got a client now. You've got it in Java. How many other clients are there that are supported by Microsoft?
By Microsoft, I'm not sure, but with Cosmos DB, we have different languages. We support the SDKs. I think it's in four languages, which includes obviously .NET. Then we have Java SDK, which is one of the biggest asks from the customers. Then we also support Node.js, and we do have a client SDK with Python. So these four are the main ones. And I think some people are trying to write a SDK in Go as well.
Nice.
I'm not sure when it has reached, but I'm really keen. Yeah. I think the protocol is open. I think someone wrote a prototype which was able to connect to Cosmos DB and had limited capabilities. But I think as the customer asks grow about the Go SDK, then I think, Cosmos DB is going to take more trust into that and, put a lot of effort. Yeah.
That's
but
super
I think,
cool.
I was just going to say it. In focus right now was the Java SDK for the last, 7-8 months. Mm-hmm. And we recently moved it to Project Reactor. So it all started with Sync APIs. Yeah, yeah. And then we had this RX Java based, SDK. But once RX Java reached end of life, and then we saw this whole Project Reactor. So it was really cool to move the SDK completely
to
the Project Reactor world. Yeah.
To be clear, I don't think RX Java has reached end of life. RX Java 3 is about to come out, for example, but
I think we depended on RX Java 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
That was the end of it. Yeah, yeah.
So moving from 1.0 to 2.0 is not trivial because the first one didn't support reactive streams. So I can only surmise, but I imagine that at that point, since you were confronted with a rewrite no matter what, you decided to go to Reactor because it was more in line with the server side.
I think it's in line, some of the research we did, we found out that, Project Reactor might be, a better fit for us. So we were like, why not move to this one? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. That's super cool. Wow. So now, and by the way, congratulations on Azure Spring Cloud. I'm very excited about all that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I'm super excited about it. Yeah,
and I know it's going to be.
And I think we'll be.
Well, I know there's a lot of good stuff, and I know you have good support for Azure Spring Cloud as well. In that environment, right? There's a starter and everything.
I think the Oh yeah, I think this.
I was just going to say that, especially in the Azure Spring Cloud keynote, I think the most fascinating thing for me was when we saw that, you know, by just changing the MongoDB properties to Cosmos DB, especially the URL and the key, and I think the application just changed the whole database. And I think that was really amazing that, you know, like no more code changes and just change, you know, the minimum stuff and get the maximum output of it.
Love it. Yeah, I love that. That was a really cool demo too.
Yeah.
We had reactive MongoDB and then we had reactive Cosmos DB. And now also we had one less thing to run on the laptop, right? It just worked, right?
Oh yeah, 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 definitely. That's cool. And I think that's where the future is going to be completely, right? That, you know, minimum stuff on local, minimum stuff on like, you know, your own servers and stuff, and just being managed, you know, different services. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be a nice future to have it all managed. The future is managed, so that's cool. You were talking about how we have the new sort of reactor based Spring Data Cosmos DB module, right? Were there any features that came with the move to reactor that made things easier in terms of implementation?
Yeah, I think with especially with the Spring stuff, when we moved Cosmos DB SDK to reactor, we definitely got like, you know, more, much better testing experience with Project Reactor. Like, you know, all those step verifiers and all those things you can create, you can like simulate like, you know, time elapsing situations and stuff like that. I think that was really important. I think one of the most important things was sometime back in RxJava 1, they didn't have a support for like, you know, throwing checked exceptions and stuff like that. They would wrap it on like, you know, automatically like a runtime exception, and you know there were like some small problems out there, so these were some good solutions that we got from Project Reactor. And I think the cool part about it was once we had like this V3 SDK of Cosmos DB, which was, you know, stable, which is now on Project Reactor, I think it was really easy to integrate it with Spring Data Cosmos DB. So Spring Data Cosmos DB until now was just supporting the sync repository, which was just the CRUD repository. And starting probably a couple of months back, I got involved in the Spring Data Cosmos DB project, we thought that okay, it is now we have the capability on the Cosmos DB side, so why not just, you know, start implementing the reactive CRUD repository. And I think that's when things got really interesting. They also got a bit easy for us because Cosmos DB had this whole SDK which supports the Project Reactor, and we supported the reactive CRUD repository. And now Spring Data Cosmos DB is going to be, you know, I think the 2.2.0 GA version is coming out soon, probably in the next couple of days. And that supports both CRUD and reactive CRUD repository. And I think that's a big win for the Spring Data Cosmos DB, that, you know, in the other Spring Data world, I think most of the other databases, they provide all these things. So I think that was a big opportunity for us to go, you know, fully reactive. Yeah.
Right. So, but does that mean you have to actually like, you've got a natively reactive thing underneath the hood, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And so does that mean that the blocking one, the non-reactive one, is actually using reactive behind the scenes, but you have to make it not reactive kind of?
Yeah. I mean, we had a couple of options. Either we would use the blocking, blocking reactive APIs in the sync SDK, or the new option that I think I might choose going, you know, a couple of months down the road, which now Cosmos DB also supports the sync SDK within the async SDK. So basically within the Project Reactor SDK that we just talked about, now it also has a sync layer on top of it that just supports the sync API. So I think the main reason to put both sync and async in the Cosmos DB was that, you know, if the users want to migrate to async, it's usually a bit difficult for them to, you know, actually update all of their production versions to the newest SDK, you know, completely rewrite the code at all and stuff like that. So I think we chose that, okay, let's provide both sync SDK APIs and the async ones in the same version, you know, just referred by a package name. And it would be really simple for the users. And I think I might be the first one from the Spring Data Cosmos DB side who might want to update, you know, his implementation and just use the sync layer that the SDK provides inherently so that I won't have to do any blocking calls on the Spring Data Cosmos DB. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I'm a big user of Cosmos DB SDK. The SDK that I write, I would also have to consume it all the time in the Spring Data board. And that's a really good situation for me because that gives me more insights about, wow, what can I do in the Cosmos DB that would actually make my life easier in the Spring Data world? And I think that's a really good situation, good scenario to be in when you really want to, you know, develop the SDK to a really good level. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, that's super cool. Let's think about this. So you've got now that version. You've got the version now based on Reactive. You have this path forward where you might be able to use this compatibility that you've just described, right? This new level. Yeah. What are some of the big features that are coming in the next release?
I think
what's the pipeline look like?
Yeah, let's talk about the Spring Data world. In the Spring Data Cosmos DB, till now, there was the sync repository was really supported very well. I mean, there were still some big missing features, but now with the 2.2.0 GA live that we are going to go, the biggest feature would be the complete support of the Reactive repositories. Other than that, I would like to thank the open source community who have, you know, taken the effort in the last couple of months to provide, like, you know, even they are like small features, but I think those are really good improvements, which are like, you know, some of them are like optimistic locking based on the based on a field within the Cosmos DB. Then, you know, they have all implemented that now you can support dynamic collection naming. So basically you won't have to specify your collection name, you know, during the compile time. You can pass it on with application.properties, and that supports creating the collection dynamically on the runtime. You can decide the name. Then there is some support for the spell expressions, you know, for the Spring Data Cosmos DB now that you can support all these collection names with the spell expression language. Then there's some more support for the, like, I think it's the object mappers that we had. They had like some limitations. So I think those have been, you know, removed, and now it's working really good and well. And I think one big feature that we are going to support from our side is the addition of diagnostic strings in the Spring Data world. So basically once you, or let me put it this way, diagnostic string is an ability for Cosmos DB SDK to figure out what happened with each request, you know, how it went through, how many retries were there, was it able to reach the backend and stuff like that, how much time it took, like all the request latencies. Then you can run, since you can run SQL queries in the Cosmos DB SDK, so it provides you with query metrics. And now all of those things are going to be supported in the Spring Data world as well. So that is a really big improvement that we have done, because, you know, people were coming up with like, okay, my queries are taking a bit of time, but there's actually no way to figure out, you know, where the time went. So that is going to be a big thing. And I think in the near future, probably sometime around next month, we plan to support query annotations, which has been the biggest ask for the Spring Data Cosmos DB, because you can write native SQL queries for the Cosmos DB SDK. So people have been coming up with like, you know, that I know how to write it in the Cosmos DB SDK, but it would be great if I can use it with my Spring Boot projects. And I think the way to go there is just once we implement it in the Spring Data Cosmos DB, then I think that would be really helpful for the users to use it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool. And it's, you know, with a cloud-based service, giving people more insight and more visibility into what's happening becomes all the more critical, because it's sort of like there is no other way. It's not like you can log into the box on which the database is running. and start poking around log files, you know?
Exactly. So, that's the biggest biggest abstraction, I would say, you know, that happens. And plus, that might have some cons, but, you know.
Microsoft knows how to make developers happy. Then, you know, they've got that.
Yeah.
Famous for that. So,
yeah.
Makes sense. Well, that's super cool. Now, you work on the Spring, you work on the SDK itself for Cosmos DB for Java. Do you work on any of the other ones, or is it just the Java one? I mean, I'm just wondering, before you answer, I'm wondering, are there some things that are, is there feature parity across them, or is the Java one ahead or behind, or, you know, I haven't used the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, frankly speaking, first of all, I don't work on any other of them. I mean, I started my work on the Python SDK, but then there were lots of stuff to do on the Java one. So I moved back to the Java SDK back. But I think, frankly speaking, .NET SDK is usually the one which is the most aggressive in terms of, like, you know, testing out new features, putting new features. But even in that case, we usually try to make sure that the version releases that go together out, like, you know, .NET SDK v4 is coming out, so Java SDK v4 will also be shipping out soon. So there's not a huge feature difference between them. There might be, like, some, you know, additional improvements which have already been done on the .NET, which are still missing on the Java side. Obviously, the bug fixes make sure that go both in the SDKs, but like some small things. But usually, we try to keep in sync with, you know, all the different SDKs. I mean, Python might be the least one which is probably being used as in, like, the other ones. So that might lag a bit behind, but especially Node.js, Java, and .NET are, like, super hot right now. So they go, like, hand in hand. Yeah.
Nice. Super cool. That's amazing. And obviously, people who are using Spring, that's a big audience, right? There's a big Java community.
Big Java community, yeah, all time.
And I'm very impressed with Microsoft's, you know, it's very hard not to be impressed by the commitment that Microsoft has very clearly made in the last few years, and more every day, to the Java community. So obviously, I'm very impressed with the work that you are doing in particular around the Spring Data Cosmos project, and around the driver experience there. And I'm also impressed with the larger, you know, Spring team, right, at Microsoft. There's a huge team of people that are working on making Spring the first class experience for people using Microsoft Azure's services.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still get those, you know, surprising looks from the customers, even till date. Like last week when I was in conference, they were like, wow, now Microsoft supports all this, like, you know, Java and Spring stuff. I mean, earlier it was just a .NET shop, but I don't think that's the case anymore. I mean, the Spring, Azure Spring team we have is like huge. And I think, I mean, frankly speaking, all the developers I've worked with in the Azure Spring, they are, like, super talented, and then they are, like, super dedicated to, you know, bring this Spring support very nicely on the Azure cloud. So I think
absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. They're doing amazing things. And, you know, more new things every day. I spend time with different teams at Microsoft, and every time I go there, I'm just, when people first started reaching out to me from Microsoft, it was sort of, hey, what should we be doing? And more and more, don't tell them that, don't tell them this, of course, but more and more, it's now I go talk to people at Microsoft, and I'm just going, wow, that's so great. I could never have imagined some of the things that you're doing, right? They're leading the way in a lot of ways. So that's awesome. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, my friend, I appreciate your time. I'm super excited about the Azure Spring Cloud integration. I'm super excited about all the work you're doing there. I'm super excited that it's reactive. Even if you're not using Azure Spring Cloud, you can use the starter for Cosmos DB, and it's now reactive, which is super cool.
Yeah. you can use this Azure Spring Boot starters with Cosmos DB that now supports, they enable the reactive repositories. Then if you want, you can directly use the Spring Data Cosmos DB, which also has a reactive support. And now if you want, if not those two, you can still come back to Cosmos DB as SDK, which also supports the reactive world. So I think those three layers are gonna be really helpful, and they provide abstraction on top of each other. And I think Azure Spring Boot is the easiest way to just get started with a project. And if you want more functionalities, then dive deeper into the SDKs itself, and then probably you can have it all. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also, I'm pretty sure, let me check here, Spring Boot Starter on start.spring.io. There's a checkbox there that'll bring in the bill of materials. And then, of course, you can use that to then add the starter for Cosmos DB. So the Maven dependency is managed for you automatically.
Oh, yeah.
If I think people right want to now, get started.
Yeah, I think since we are still going to release the 2.2.0 probably in this coming week, and I think we plan to ship it as soon as possible, and we are just managing the different dependencies across like all the different SDKs we have, because in the Spring world we do have, I think there's a Spring Data Gremlin support as well. I think we want to make sure that we do have, like, going in the future, we will try to have the Spring Data MongoDB or the Cassandra as well. So once we do the GA, then I think in the start .spring.io you should be able to see it within the 2.2.0, and I think probably in the 2.1.9 if you try to type, then you would get it for sure.
Yeah, the older versions work, but it's not yet 2.2.0 compatible. But I'm assuming that by the time this episode airs, we're recording this and towards the end of October, so by the time this thing airs, and it'll be there.
Of course, yeah. I think I'm gonna create a PR on the Spring Boot side of things, that please put this in the Spring initialization project, because once we release, I'll notify them for sure. Yeah.
Nice, my friend. Where can people find you? You've taught me a whole bunch of stuff. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to talk to you, where can they find you?
I'm not that that much active in the social community as of now, but I think
not on Twitter.
I had a developer account back on Twitter, because I was doing some development on some other stuff, but that was just for the coding experience. But
yeah,
people can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm really active on LinkedIn, and I reply to like all the people and try to help them with anything they want. So yeah,
nice.
LinkedIn probably the way to go. Yeah.
Well, that's super cool.
Yeah.
You send me a URL for, do you want to spell your name? That's even better. Spell your name so people can find you on LinkedIn.
Oh yeah. It's KUSHAGRATHAPAR. So it's, I think, LinkedIn, then, / Kushagra Thapar. And that should take you to my page.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate your time. I hope we get to hang out in Seattle sooner rather than later, ideally long before Spring One next year. I hope you have a good day.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, George, for having me on this podcast. I really appreciate that. And yeah, it was really fun chatting with you. Thank you so much. Have a good time.
A Bootiful podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email, or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.